And live from New York, it's Saturday Night!
Pre-taped from Toronto, it's Saturday Night! Not too bad. It is a new month in comedy on a whole new night. This Saturday night, we go one-on-one with Canadian comedy expat Graham Kay and an inside look at the life of an open micer with realtor by day, comic by night, Rasha Alfecky. It's an all-new night with comedy's best of the best. I'm Dean Young, and we're about to go inside the joke.
Welcome to Inside Jokes on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Welcome back to an all-new Inside Jokes, boys and girls. Brought to you, of course, by our lovely friends at Hakeem Optical, helping you spot hecklers in the crowd since 1967. It is a new month in comedy, and of course, as you're listening right now, an all-new night. Inside Jokes is coming at you Saturday nights at 9 from here on out. And of course, you're listening on 640 Toronto, and as always, streaming all over planet Earth on Tay Internets at Global News Online. New night, new month, exciting things happening in comedy. I got our producer Vince Tedesco on the line with us. How you doing, buddy?
Saturday night, big date night.
Saturday night.
That was my
So basically, whoever's home on a Saturday night at 9 post-pandy, we're going to have some incels, Vince. That's basically going to be...
Or driving. You could be driving in the car right now.
You could be driving. Basically, whoever's not out having sex or going to bars, you got this now.
Can we be a little more raunchier now that
that's going to be our new promo? Yeah, I don't know. What's the how does that work? Do we take on a new tone? Do we take on a new flavor? We're halfway through our seventh season here, but do we go? You know, we went from talk radio on a Sunday night to like Saturday. It's electric, baby. It's comedy night.
Woo! Disco, get your boogaloos ready and your
dance. Get your boogaloos ready. So we have kind of, it's kind of a two-sided coin tonight, Vince, to kick off our new Saturday nights here on Inside Jokes. We've kind of got two sides of quote-unquote going pro in comedy. We have Canadian comic Graham Kay, who of course we've chatted to over the years, both inside and outside of studio. Lots of Canadian audiences will know him from, you know, all the club stages in Canada. He was a regular working touring comic, always headlining at festivals. But of course, he makes his home in New York, has been for the last few years. He's made the rounds on late night TV. We're going to get into it with him about that. But he's also has a brand new 1 hour show, which he's bringing home to Toronto. My Brother Has Autism. So that's Graham Kay. And then a little later on in the show, very interesting, we have a comic who's just celebrating their one-year anniversary of hitting the stage and sort of hitting the, you know, open mic scene here in Toronto. Realtor by day, successful realtor by day, now venturing into comedy at night. Those are two very different sides of the coin. We're going to get into that with her. We got Rasha Alfecky on the show later on. It is a double panel, brand new, right here on Saturday nights, right here on Inside Jokes. Welcome back to an all-new Inside Jokes on an all-new night right here on 640 Toronto, Saturday nights, and of course, streaming everywhere where there's the internets on Global News Online. Brought to you, as always, by our lovely friends at Hakeem Optical, because the planet is getting hotter, and so are your selfies. First up in the show, I'm really excited about this, because it is such an interesting duality. Most of the comedians we've talked to in the last seven seasons of this show don't have what you would call a day job 99% of the time. Not really always the most stable group of people either. I can because I love, but I mean, it's kind of true. So it's interesting. We have a comic coming up on the show celebrating their 1 year on the stand-up scene, hitting stages all across here in Toronto and sort of coming up in this scene right now. Rasha Alfecky, who also by day is quite a successful realtor. So those are two extremely different sides of the coin. Lots to get into here. Rasha, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm really happy to be here.
It's such an interesting thing because you have, I mean, you were all be obviously, I mean, and we've looked at your social and all that stuff. You already you had an established career. You're already a successful established realtor, which I mean, that's another career that is very much sort of a lifestyle career. I mean, you have to be very social. You have to be very extroverted. In a lot of ways, I feel like you're kind of selling your personality. You have to sort of present this sort of image of success, right? You have to nowadays be extremely active on social media and sort of brand yourself. So all of that kind of ties into what comics also have to do. You kind of have to constantly hustle and push yourself out there and get your name out and grow your followers and that sort of. But for you, I mean, entering this world of comedy, and yeah, you've hit the 1 year mark now, which congratulations. The first thing I was curious about was, do you sort of struggle to keep those worlds separate? Like when you started in comedy, were you worried that that would in some way sort of like work against what you had built with your profile in real estate? Were you worried that like, well, a comedy is going to sort of like taint that or anything?
That was definitely a concern. I was scared that like my professionalism would be like, you know, it, you know what I mean? Like, how do I put it?
Compromise?
I was afraid. Yeah. I felt like my jokes, like the clients got a hold of them, maybe they would be, you know, kind of confused. It's two different personalities. It's completely like a whole different world. I feel like when I'm a real estate agent, I'm putting on an act. Not that I'm not being myself, but it is a different person that I'm not being funny when I'm trying to sell your house.
Right.
If that makes sense. And then when I'm on stage, somebody asked me, they go, who do you relate more to, your real estate self or your comedian self? And I was like, I think I am myself on stage. Like that is truly like deep down, like who I am. If you meet me and I'm not trying to sell your house, I am going to be cracking jokes. I am going to be making fun of things. Like that is my personality. But it was scary because I was like, I hope my clients don't find my social media. And I even took out my real estate account off my social account, my comedy account, because that as I go viral on TikTok and Instagram, like those followers come to that. Like I'm nervous that, you know, people cancel culture is going to come at me. They're going to message my brokerage. They're going to. But at the same time, like, I love the game. Like, I'm not going to stop doing comedy.
Well, that is the thing, the interesting thing, too. Like, I was wondering, like, when you first started this, did you consider doing, like, well, I have to have, like, a stage name and all this stuff just to sort of keep those worlds from overlapping? Because it is true. When you're in real estate, you know, you're sort of, you do have to be this sort of, you have to exude this image of success. And it's all about sort of like driven determinedness and positivity and all of that. So you are playing a character in a way, like you said. Mm-hmm. And in stand-up, you're very much, you know, when you get up on stage, you're sort of obviously a more dialed up version of yourself. You're sort of, you step into this thing where you're sort of a caricature of yourself. It must be a great outlet for you though, to be able to go there and just sort of vent all this stuff that, again, like you say, when you're showing a house to sort of a high-end client, you're not sitting there cracking jokes and you know. Very much this polished thing. It must be a great vent for you then in that way.
100%. It is literally my outlet for everything though. Even I was explaining to somebody, like, I'm my whole life, if anything happens, like that's like a low point, I've always taken it and turned it into a joke.
Yeah.
Like I take traumatic experiences. I feel like a lot of comedians do that. Like they'll be talking about somebody breaking their heart. And how it is now, like the way they speak about it, it's like, why is this the funniest thing I've ever heard? But I know in that moment you were heartbroken. Like,
yeah,
that's how I use comedy. Like, it's my outlet for everything. Like, I'm a storyteller. Like, that's my style. So I'll be talking a lot about like immigrating as a kid. Like, I was born in Egypt. I didn't know English. I was that kid that was like an outsider. So like, I lived in LA growing up too. So I was really the adjustment. Then I come here at 10 and like the constant moving, I had to keep making friends, which means I had to learn how to like, you know, be that person that kind of is like on the playground looking for anything and just like popping up and saying anything and like trying to make friends. Like it felt like constantly re-imaging myself. And like,
yeah.
I like, and so like with comedy, it's like people always say to me, oh, you're such a natural. And I'm like, man, my whole life I've had to reintroduce myself. So that's just how it is.
I like how you accidentally went the traditional Canadian comedy route, by the way, which is go to LA first and then realize, no, I got to go to Toronto and hit some mic.
She was nine, Dean. She was nine.
In a way, even though you're celebrating 1 year, you kind of got an early start on it, really, because that's sort of the trajectory of every Canadian comic ever. It's like you go to LA and then come back because it didn't work, and then you start on mics in Toronto. So you're like 20 years ahead of the game already. So there you go. All right, we're going to come. I do find this such an interesting story. And again, there's lots I want to get into also about just sort of like what the mics and what the scene looks like in Toronto right now after these last couple of years. Who better to talk to you about that than Rochelle Fecky, because she's out there right now hitting those stages in real time. We're going to come back with more on Inside Jokes right after the break.
Hey guys, this is Rochelle Fecky. You guys are listening to Inside Jokes. Stay funny.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto. And of course, as always, streaming everywhere on planet Earth where there's the internets on Global News Online. Don't touch that dial, but at least you can see where it is. Thanks to Hakeem Optical, we have Rochelle. Right? Yeah, you didn't know where I was going there, Vince. We got Rochelle Fecky back on the show with us again, realtor by day, comedian by night. Rochelle, it's very much this sort of Batman lifestyle that you have cultivated for yourself here. I mean, yeah, before the break, we were talking about how, you know, you did sort of want to keep those worlds separate because you're entering this, because there's sort of an element of like darkness and mystery and danger to the comedy world. And I know you're out there hitting mics right now. It's a very different landscape even than it was a couple of years ago. I mean, Pandy aside, we're calling it the Pandy, by the way, because let's try to sound more fun than it was. You look at the Toronto stand-up scene now, it is such a different landscape. I mean, a lot of the old heritage rooms that a lot of us came up in, those are sort of gone now. There's a whole bunch of independent comedy clubs that have sprung up across the scene that are sort of the new hubs now. Comedy Bar has a second location. I know you're out there hitting the mics every night, and it's always was this hustle and grind. Is it still a city right now where you really can, as a comic starting out in your first year, basically get limitless stage time? Is that how it feels still?
I would say right now there is an open mic every night. You can always find something. Sometimes there'll be bucket shows, which means like you might get on, you might not. And it is a hustle. It is a hustle. Like I definitely would say that in the beginning, like I think I was just so addicted to it. It was a high that I would get after like performing a 4 minute set. And in the beginning, 4 minutes was like all I needed. And like I now like I look back and I'm like I still move the way I used to. Like I'm still out here. Like tonight I will be hitting up two open mics. And I'll drive like from one and like I'll look at Google Maps and try to see if I can make another one. And like it's fun and it's like sometimes crazy at the same time. Like people look at me and they're like, your gas bill, and I'm like, I love the game.
Yeah, the game is the game. Was there somebody, I mean, I know our producer Vince wants to throw you a question here too. I was just curious, I mean, because that is such an extreme difference from what you do by day. Was there anybody that influenced you? Was there comics that you grew up watching that you kind of went, I want to do that one day? Like, this couldn't have been a spur of the moment thing. It had to be always there below the surface.
You know what though? It kind of, it's going to sound crazy, but it wasn't like not an accident, but it was supposed to be like a one time, I'm going to do this bucket list. One time open mic. I honestly love comedy, like stand up in real life. Like I always tell people, it's not the same as watching it on Netflix. You have to go physically. And when me and my best friend are both like comic like addicts, like we travel the world and we will go to different places, and like we love doing that. And we were in San Francisco. I watched a pro show, and it was these two comedians they were doing a taping. And I thought, wow, like I never looked at them and thought I can be them, because I, in my head, I've only seen pros my whole life. So in my head, I was like, you're just born a pro. I didn't realize there were steps to get there. Like, yeah. I just assumed that that's it. Like, you're just a comedian, you're born a pro. And so for me, I didn't even think that that was a possibility when I was watching them. The following day, we end up at an open mic. And this is my first experience of what an open mic is. I don't even understand, like, anybody can put their name and get up there.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, these people suck. like these people are bombing. And it is a small little like brewery. Again, we're still in San Francisco at this time. And I jokingly say to my friend, like, why don't I get up there? Who cares? I'm in San Francisco. Nobody knows me. Like, why not? And yeah. Then she's like, yeah, do it, do it. And I chickened out. I was like, no. Let me write some stuff. But I'll promise, when we're back in Toronto and things open up, because we were during the pandemic, I said, I'll do it. And my best friend knows me. She's the type, like, to kind of, like, egg me on. She's like, oh, yeah? Really? Shake my hand. And I was like, oh, you think I'm scared? Like, she knows if she tells me I won't, I'm going to do it. So for me, it was more like a dare. Like, I needed to prove a point.
I do love what you're saying about those sign up and go up open mics, because, you know, you might see these hidden gems, this just comedy talent that's just sort of waiting to get out there. But boy, oh boy, do you ever see some things you can't unsee. It is like a parade of human suffering at a lot.
Yeah.
It's now, fascinating Russia, to do that study.
Russia, did you say the two worlds don't collide? Like you don't cross over from one to the other. So you do not talk about your real estate life on stage.
I do have a couple of bits about being a real estate agent. They're not really the most positive. It's more like I villainized it. I like will say, I know, guys, I'm sorry. Like people look at me like I'm the reason the economy's failing. Like I'll go about it and I'll be talking about the negatives. Like I know real estate agents get a bad rep, you know. Like
When you get heckled as a real estate agent on stage?
Yeah, I get heckled as a real estate agent for sure. People, like, I have a joke saying, like, my dad initially, when he found out I was a comic, he wasn't very happy with it. Like, he's an old school immigrant, like, parent. I mean, my mother was a fan. She loved this.
Well, and moms, like, are more supportive. So yeah. Has a client ever actually seen you on stage and been like, oh, my God, that's my agent?
No, a lot of my clients are actually older. So like I got, like they don't have social media. And like one time I got followed like on TikTok by a client, it was an instant block.
Yeah.
Like I instantly blocked and I told only a couple of clients that I was a comedian, but it's like almost like a trust thing. Like, I don't know if I can trust you. And again, it's because I don't want to make myself seem unprofessional. I feel like on stage, I sometimes play a more immature role, like a silly role. I'm goofy. Like I'm going to say some things, like maybe there's some jokes that are a little bit, you know, just out of pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it is interesting. I mean, you kind of have to be constantly on that to sort of keep those things separate. Before we wrap it up with you, we're going to grab your social and where we can see you live and all that good stuff. Your comedy social, of course. We'll stay away from the realty stuff. Do you have a particular favorite room in Toronto right now where you most like to go and just sort of work stuff out? Every comic kind of has like their home stage.
Well, for me right now, I actually, I alternate with a host. We do an open mic in Port Credit in Mississauga where I live. So it's called Canvas Art Bar. And that's definitely my favorite room. Of course, it's because I get like all the time in the world I'm hosting. But before that, I would say the lab. That lab is really good. And Yuck Yuck's Amateur Night. I'm going to have to say on Tuesday.
Inside Jokes, we know and love Port Credit quite well. We used to do a live show there. And also shout out to my friends over at The Brogue. Rasha Alfeqi, thank you so much. So where can we find you online, find your social, your upcoming shows, all that good stuff?
My social is That Girl Rasha, and you can find everything. I usually post when I'm on anybody's show, so that's where you'll find me.
Excellent. Rasha Alfeqi, I mean, congrats again on the 1-year mark, and I love that you're going out and doing this, and hopefully you can keep that stream going, and maybe that'll be your be all and end all one day. Who knows? But hopefully you can kind of keep your daytime and nighttime selves separate and keep going.
Batman. She's Batman.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you again.
Hey, this is not Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you're listening to Inside Jokes on 640.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto. And of course, as always, streaming coast to coast, Canada-wide, North America-wide, planet Earth-wide, in fact, if you have the internets on Global News Online, brought to you, as always, by our lovely friends at Hakeem Optical. Sure, we're on the brink of destruction, but boy, do those frames look good. How is that for a plug? We have a returning friend of the show. We haven't chatted with this guy in quite a while. As we established, it was during what I'm playfully referring to now on the air as the Pandy. Let's try and make that more fun. But returning friend of the show, he's got a brand new one-man, one-hour show coming out. He's bringing it back home to Toronto coming up this month. Graham K, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. You know, I might have COVID, but but who knows? Who knows what is COVID these days? You know, it's like all conceptual.
It's become a very philosophical thing at this point. Now, is this your first dance with that? Did you ever have it in the first go around? Did you have sort of the OG version ever that really like knocked everyone on their ass, or are you perfectly safe?
I didn't have the OG version, I don't think, but I definitely got the Omicron. I got about this time last year. I like to get it about this time every year. I got the Omicron. I was in Detroit doing shows, and that's the place where you get Omicron.
I was going to say that's a terrible series of things, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And COVID. I mean, comedians got to eat. I don't know. What are you going to do? But I mean, we talked to you sort of mid-pandemic, you know, because we haven't been in person in a radio studio physically talking to other human beings in 2.5 seasons of this show at this point. But last time we talked to you, I mean, you kind of did stay busy during the whole thing. I mean, of course, a lot of our Canadian listeners know you well from your days in Toronto. I mean, we always knew you were a club comic, you were a festival guy. You sort of did what you do. You sort of rise to the top of the scene here in Canada and get your papers and go. But of course, you've established your home in New York, which is, of course, a stand-up comedy mecca. I mean, over the last few years, you've been, you know, you're pumping out albums. You made the rounds on American Late Night. But you're coming back home the end of December. You got a brand new one-hour show, a one-man show, which, by the way, I mean, this title, for those of us who know your comedy, and of course, I came up in Toronto watching you on stage, room like The Riv and all that stuff. Yeah. You do have this sort of very dry, punch to the jugular delivery sometime. This title of this one-man show really does kind of grab you by the throat. My brother has autism. I mean, it's a very blunt, exact title. So I wanted to get into, like, what's a bit of what this show is all about? It feels like this is maybe, do you think this is one of the most personal things you've done in your stand-up to date?
Yeah, it's definitely something that people resonate more with. Like, it's I think it's pretty funny. I think it's super funny. But they're I was like so concerned over my career with like every 5 seconds there's like a punchline, bang, bang, bang. And then this is one where I'm allowing myself to like take like 30-second breathe. Like there's a little more silence in it, and then there's like a big pop. And that's been interesting for me to learn. But it also, people are coming up to me after the shows a lot more and saying, you know, that really like resonated with me and stuff, where, you know, before when I'm talking about my ex-girlfriend's cat, people just sort of, you know, kind of forget about it, you know? So it's weird. There's sometimes people get offended. They think I'm making fun of them. And it's like, well, I'm just talking about my experience with growing up with someone with autism. He's my only sibling. And I like had to like protect him and take care of him. And it was super awkward. Like, you know, I talk about how, like, even right now, like, he'll still do Apu from The Simpsons in public. And he, like me, is white.
Yeah.
And and there's nothing I can do about it. And I just have to sit there and just let him commit a hate crime.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's life, you know, that's just what it's like. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think it's good that he's doing it, but what am I supposed to do? You know?
Yeah. Well, you're not just white. You're like Ottawa white, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Upper echelon of, I mean, it is interesting though. Like you said, I mean, cause when you come up, you know, when you're in Toronto and you come up and you're doing, you know, 15 minutes at the club, it is very much about that. Like, okay, you got to grab the audience the second you get on stage, and it's got to be go, 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 hit. With a show like this, you know, a one man show, it is kind of, there's a lot more of a storytelling element to it. You are sort of like weaving the audience in and out of this sort of narrative. Like you said, you do get those moments where you kind of want to pause and breathe, and you're sort of doing this longer form thing. And it's sort of more reflective. Is this something you had been working on for a while? Because it feels like something that, obviously, it's a lifelong thing for you. It is such a back pocket thing. Have you sort of been carrying this around in your head for a while? Like, did you get to workshop this and fringe it and stuff like that?
This will be probably the second time I've ever run it as a show. I've been doing it piecemeal in comedy clubs, I've been doing, like, you know, little bits here and there, just seeing how the jokes work, like in New York at the Comedy Cellar or wherever. But I don't want to, and I'll do like a 15 minute set that's just about autism. But to do a full 45 just about autism, I haven't stitched those bits together to make one thing yet, because it's a different show when I go on the road. I don't want to be like, I can't just arrive. They're hiring me to do comedy, you know, at these comedy clubs. And like, I just did air quotes on the radio
about comedy too.
Yeah, I'm like the biggest idiot in the world. But anyway, so you kind of just can't like just fly to Fort Collins, Colorado, and then just do an autism show when they're not expecting it.
Yeah,
I'll do like 15 minutes. I'll do 20 maybe. Sometimes if it's going really well, I'll do like maybe half an hour, but. This will be the first time it'll pretty much all be autism. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to do it. And I want to bring it to Edinburgh next year. That's a big fringe festival. It's the biggest one in the world. And it's like where, like, you know, all the sort of famous one man shows come from, like Mike Birbiglia or Nanette or whatever. So
yeah.
I want to do that there. And then I want to bring it back to New York and do a little theater run here after that. So this on the Danforth Comedy Bar will be my first time doing it on the 29th of December.
And it's kind of perfect in a way that, you know, I mean, you've been living and working in the States for years now, and you know, that's become your home, but it is kind of fitting to bring this back to what was your, you know, this was your stand-up home, and this was your base for many years. This is where you came up through the scene here. So it's kind of nice and fitting to bring this back and, of course, do it at Comedy Bar. But it is funny what you say. Like, when you're a comic, you're on the road, that's the life. So, yeah, when you're flying up to these gigs and you're playing clubs all over the place, there is kind of that element of, like, because you have to go there and that's it. You just, the audience has to be laughing the whole time, and you're sort of married to the girl in a way, you know. Yeah.
You have to smash.
I mean, this must feel like a bit of a different outlet for you to just be able to, like, you're in charge of this. This is something that is completely personal to you.
Yeah.
And this is for you and for your own audience. It must feel refreshing in a way.
Oh, 100%. That's the goal for... So comedians, the goal is like, you got to like, you know, get your own fans and become a draw, and then you can do whatever you want. And I have my own fans, but I don't have enough where I can like I opened for my buddy Nate Bargatze, and he just graduated from theaters to arenas, and it's like, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And they're there for him. And so this will be like this will be a thing that I'm making just for me. You know, I'm like a, you know, so it's, I mean, I'm excited for that. I'm very excited for that.
And it's been interesting seeing where you've come to. I mean, the other thing I want to pick your brain on is, of course, you know, over the last few years, Pandy aside, but you've made the rounds on late night TV. I mean, that was always, for any comic, that was always such a huge career maker. That was such a huge milestone. You get on one, never mind multiple of the late shows, and it was like, okay, I've made it now. That was a launcher for a lot of comics. And I mean, of course, that's still a massive thing. I mean, to be able to go on network television and do late night is still such a huge thing for comics. For you, because things are skewing a lot more independent now, I mean, it's, here in Canada, it's changed so much. You don't have just those sort of narrow channels of this club, this festival anymore. Those things still exist, but there's a lot more of an element of sort of making your own go of things now. Do you think late night TV means for comics what it used to? Do you think it's still like, this is it, I've made it now? Or do you think it's just sort of a cool feather to have in your cap and then you just go on to the next gig?
I think it hasn't made a comic in 10 years.
Yeah.
I think it's just a cool feather in your cap. It's still a cool thing to do. You're like the only face on NBC. The whole network is just on your head.
Yeah.
For like 5 minutes. It's pretty cool. You know, it was awesome. It was awesome to do, but the days of Johnny Carson are over. The new Johnny Carson is like, you know, it's like, unfortunate to say, it's like Joe Rogan or something. It's like, yeah, you go on that and then your career is probably a little different. And then, yeah. like, and also they have like, you know, if you can, there's these like TikTok and Instagram aggregators that, like, one bigger one is like Don't Tell Comedy, and they will get these like 1 minute clip could do way more for you these days than doing like a late night show. Cause those 1 minute clips, you know, they get like a couple million views, maybe like 10 million views. And then if you go right now on like my some of my late nights, like they have like 100,000 views or something, which is still amazing, still a lot of views, but that's on YouTube. But like, then plus the people who watched it live, I guess. But it's like, I don't know, it's just different. So you kind of, it's all, comedy's a lot different. Like I'm struggling a lot with this autism show. Do I break it? Do I just, as my jokes, a lot of the jokes are ready now. Do I just put them, like, chop them up into 1 minute little jokes and put them up now? What am I saving them for? A special?
Right.
Like, no one, you know, there's no, I don't know. So we've been at a crossroads, it feels, for like 5 years.
it is kind of true. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, it's sort of like, these are all just platforms that you kind of have to adapt to. It's like, you know, network television isn't going anywhere, but yeah, social media plays into things so much more now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, Graham. I mean, you know, when festivals here, like JFL 42, all of a sudden was putting, you know, YouTubers on gala shows, and we're all kind of like, who the fuck is Miranda Sings? What's going on here? And they're they have, you know, 2 million followers. And it's like, we thumbed our noses at that not too many years ago, and now it's like, it's just part of the game now. That's just,
well, we should have thumbed our noses at someone who's not a stand-up being on a stand-up show. And it was like an awful show, and I remember that was like particularly terrible.
Yeah.
But like, the stand-ups have to evolve, and then, because they're actually funny, and then take over the Miranda Sings territory.
Yeah.
That's what's happening now.
It is. It can't, you know, we found that sort of happy medium in a way where it's like, it can't just be all about numbers. I mean, stand-up's still got to be stand-up. All right, more to get into with our friend Graham Kay and his new one-hour show. We're going to come back right here with more Inside Jokes.
Hey, everybody, this is Graham Kay, who is a comedian, and you are listening to Inside Jokes, which is a comedy AM radio live through the airwaves. Good for you. Keep listening. I gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day you die, you gonna touch the sky. You gonna touch the sky, baby girl. Testify.
Come up in the spot looking extra fly. Welcome back to Inside Jokes, boys and girls, brought to you, as always, by our good friends at Hakeem Optical. helping you spot hecklers in the crowd since 1967. We have Graham Kay on the line with us. And of course, brand new one-hour show, one-man show coming back home to Toronto later this December called My Brother Has Autism. And Graham, I know, so you have another new special coming out that I want to pick your brain on as well.
Yeah.
I'm curious though, because we were talking before the break about how obviously this is, you know, this is an extremely personal show for you. This is stuff that you don't get to really funnel into your regular stand-up, obviously, when you're doing a headline spot at a club in Des Moines or whatever it is, right? So it is sort of a personal thing. Has your family seen any of this material yet? Is your brother, does he know about any of this material? I mean, I'm sure he is aware of this show's existence, of course, but have they seen any of this stuff or had a chance to react to it, or is it all sort of fresh?
It's pretty fresh. I don't know if my brother could conceptualize that I'm doing a stand-up show about us. But I think, like, I've told him I do stand-up and talk about
what your job is, basically, yeah.
Growing up with him. And he's like, oh. He's like, okay, I like orange soda. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't really, he's like, let's do Simpsons impressions. Let's stop, you know, so... So it's one of those things. I don't really feel like guilty about it or anything like that, because I know I'm not punching down. So yeah. I'm like, well, whatever. And my parents, they always find out when the thing comes out. I remember my last special, the one I did with JFL. I did like 3 years ago or something. And my parents, it was on Crave, and my parents saw it, and they wouldn't talk to me. My dad wouldn't talk to me for like 2 days.
It is. Again, as you said earlier, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a thing where you want to find your own audience with this. Of course, that's what it's about at the end of the day. But it's also very much for you as well as a comic to just sort of be able to, you know, it's kind of cathartic to be able to do this material that doesn't find its way into your regular routine. And it's not going on a, you know, headlining show at a festival or on a late night appearance or anything like that. This is just sort of for you as a person and as a comic.
Yeah.
But before we wrap it up with you, so you have another new special that came out, which I also love this title, Graham K Live from a Bowling Alley.
Yeah.
Which I assume is just very literal.
Yeah, it is. I filmed it at a bowling alley in Brooklyn. I'm really proud of this one. I think it's my best work. You can watch it on YouTube right now. So I'm promoting two things, audience. I'm promoting a live comedy show in Toronto on December 29th, which I'd love for you to come see. If you live in Calgary, I have a show in January at the Laugh Stop. Let me just do my little plugs here, folks. The Laugh Stop Calgary, January 12th, 13th, 14th. So live shows, promoting those two things. And then thirdly, I want to promote this YouTube comedy special, which I just released. I'm extremely proud of it. It's called Graham K Live in a Bowling Alley. I filmed it in a bowling alley in Brooklyn, like I said. And it's fun stuff. Fun stuff. Talk about a lot of like pandemic material that I had written during the pandemic. And I just had to get out there before it was like irrelevant. And it's like dating online during the pandemic and stuff like that. And like a lot of fun stuff.
Which is kind of interesting because we're just now starting to see a lot of comics release stuff that they were sort of honing during that time. You're starting to now see these specials and albums come out that sort of, it's like a time capsule where you're tackling that specific thing. We're going to grab your social and all that stuff. Really quick though, I wanted to ask you, because obviously, I mean, you know, New York's been your home for years. A lot of the clubs and heritage rooms that you used to, you know, come up in Toronto, and a lot of those cult places like Monday Night, it's at the Rivoli, and you know, the old, of course, Spirits with late great Joe Downey. A lot of those rooms in Toronto they're gone, sadly. I mean, the scene has changed so much.
Is Rivoli gone?
The Rivoli's still there, but those Monday nights aren't a thing anymore. And of course, Spirits is gone. For you, I mean, in New York, obviously, this is a city with so many sort of heritage clubs. It's very much a stand-up mecca. Is there a specific place in New York where you just like to go and hone stuff, and it's sort of your home stage in New York? Because every comic kind of has like a favorite stage.
Well, my favorite stage in New York is the Comedy Cellar. It's like, you know, it's the mecca. I think it's the best comedy club in the world.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the best way to get better at anything you do, whether it's like comedy or HVAC, is to like do it with somebody who's better than you. And it's like, you know, there's Lucy K is there, Chris Rock is there. You never know who's going to go before you, and then you're going to have to follow this legend who just emptied the room, you know, like not emptied it, but like sucked all the air out of the room. And then you got to kind of like layer by, I'm like, huh, you just got to go up. There's a video of online of me going up right after Chris Rock on YouTube.
Yeah, you just have to reset the space.
You have to completely reset the space. It's like, yeah.
That's the beautiful thing, though. I mean, you know, because I mean, LA is all about sort of, I'm just going there, I want to be seen and all that stuff. New York is very much, it's a diehard stand up town. It is very much a stand up city.
It's a live performance town, whether it's Broadway or, and that's why it's like a more of a late night place. And then LA is like video, sort of okay, like film, so it's early.
I love that's, it. All that's right.
Somebody told me.
Graham K, of course, listeners can catch your new one-hour, one-man show, My Brother Has Autism. You'll be back here in Toronto at the new Comedy Bar East, December 29th. And, of course, your new special, Graham K Live from a Bowling Alley on YouTube. Before we let you go, where can we find you online and follow you?
Follow me at Mr. Graham K on Instagram. Do it. Follow me. I know you're like, I'm not going to follow this guy. Follow me. Or I'll kill myself. How about that? So MrGrahamKay. Graham, like
there we go.
Kay. Yeah.
Best way to wrap up our Saturday night on the air right there. Graham K, thank you so much. And also thank you again to Rasha Alfeki. That is our show. Don't forget you can listen to all of our episodes right back to the dawn of time on Global News Online. We'll be back next Saturday night.
Hi, this is Alicia Carusi. And you're listening to my aunt, Sandra Carusi's Comedy RX.
This week's Comedy RX is Canadian stand-up comic Graham K on Stephen Colbert. Enjoy.
I used to live in a 250-square-foot apartment. Yeah. 250 square feet. And if you don't understand how to calculate square footage, you know, because I didn't when I read the ad... My microwave was my bedroom clock. Every night before I went to bed, I just set the alarm for 8 hours. On potato. Get the best sleep on potato, sir.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.